No Facts, All Feelings Wrestling Podcast. I'm Allie.
I'm Ann.
And I'm Leah.
Is everyone having a good week? Everybody enjoying their week?
Not too bad.
The middle of February. It feels good. It feels like a great time to be alive.
It do be the middle of February. It's true. I keep having like manager check-ins this week where I think like they're like, so how are things going like at work? And I'm like, it's pretty bleak out there. It's really weather-wise, it's rough for me. The light in my room is strange. They're looking at me like, I don't know if we're going to get into that.
But actually. Professionally speaking?
Professionally, I'm not thinking about my job very much. That's a joke, legally.
If my boss is listening, I was online the whole time today.
I was. I'm never offline. That is one thing I'll tell you. Well, we're going to start out by talking about, it's a little zest in the middle of February. This week, Cody and Brandi Rhodes announced that they could not come to a contract agreement with AEW, and they will be parting ways from the promotion. So, and we've all been talking about it actually near constantly ever since. It's funny because it's like we, on the record, do not like Cody, but he's so interesting to discuss sometimes anyway.
You know? Yeah, he kind of gets in there like that person you hate that you just can't stop gossiping about, kind of.
Yeah, pretty much.
But I surprised myself by also like having like a weird reaction where I'm like, yeah, he's the uncle that I don't enjoy at parties. He's still my uncle. You
right,
know what I mean?
He's in yeah. our family. Yeah. Right. I definitely have had that feeling. Well, I'll just briefly run down some of these like big factors that seem to have been brought up around their decision to leave. So some of the reports have been Cody wanted more booking power, which he had when AEW started and which the EVPs mostly don't have anymore, we think. Cody maybe wanted Punk money. So he wanted to have the kind of money that whatever like Punk and Danielson are making, which actually I don't know if there are any reports out there about that. Cody having tumultuous relationships backstage. Although some reports have said that his relationships with the other EVPs, which I guess is what I'm assuming those would be, have been pretty good over the past few months, better than they have been in the past. And then the other thing that I have here is that what people now kind of think is that that last absolutely deranged promo that he did setting up the ladder match with Sammy Guevara, where the none of the promos seemed to have anything to do with what was going on, and he had that, he started it by being like, people have told me that I should keep this like till later, but I don't know if I'll have the chance. That promo seems to have been about all of this, and some people have speculated that it's like he was trying to say like, I'm valuable and I deserve to be paid more and given more leeway and given more creative control. And also maybe he was trying to set up an angle with Punk, and we don't know if Punk wanted that or not. It's now looking like Cody will go back to WWE. So,
which of course will follow him, right, girl?
Yeah. Oh yeah, we'll follow Cody anywhere. It's very funny. Someone did post a tweet in our group chat of like someone being like, I have to stop watching AEW for a while. Like it just isn't the same without Cody. And we were all like, what?
They're like, his face got taken out. Amazing. Life is a rich tapestry. People like all kinds of things.
I guess it's true, and it is pretty crazy. Let's talk about some of the booking stuff, which I think was like pretty interesting to all of us, because the whole time that we've been watching Cody, and we weren't there from the beginning, his booking has been crazy. And he seems to be in charge of it. I mean, I don't fucking know, but he has booked himself very strangely.
Yeah, I think Tony has been like pretty good about like letting people suggest their own storylines, and it seems like some of the higher level people have been able to really book their own like storylines, although Tony has final say. So I do think that the stuff that's been going on in the Codyverse has got to be laid at Cody's door. But yeah, it's crazy that he looked at what was happening and was like, I think I should have more control and book more things. And it's like, bitch, you can't book yourself.
I know. And it's like booking yourself should, I guess maybe this isn't true, this could be wrong, but I'm like, booking yourself should kind of be the easiest thing. Like, I know.
You think you'd at least be like the most familiar with your own strengths and weaknesses, but Cody doesn't seem to be
Yeah, he doesn't see. Yeah, I you know, it's weird. Like, we've been talking about Cody's like potential heel turn or his heel turn arc for so long. Mm-hmm. And I, like everybody else on the internet, I feel like went through like every stage of being like, he's an idiot. No, it actually is a work. Like, no, this, he's doing like a meta narrative where like he thinks he's the good guy, but we know he's the bad guy. Like, and I had gotten to the point where I was like, none of it makes sense to me if he doesn't know what he's doing, because I can't imagine someone being so incompetent that they would do this and not be like seeing the various reactions and responding to them. And now it's just like, I don't know. I guess maybe none of it really was ever going anywhere. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that has been really interesting, because it's like this whole storyline where it's like he's getting booed all the time, and then but then he just keeps going with it. But then it's like, oh, everyone's like, oh, no, Cody's actually a genius and it's a work. And he's like, whatever. But now it's like he's just leaving AEW. And some of it, I feel like some of the stuff we read was like, oh, he's not happy with like the crowd reactions and how his storylines are being received and stuff. And it's like, yeah, so it just seems, especially with him just leaving it here, because he was doing all this talking like, no, I'm doing such a meta narrative that's like more interesting than anything that's been done in wrestling. But it's like, it's definitely not now. Like, you're not paying off that storyline at all. So it's just like, I feel like he was just saying it was a work to like as an excuse for like, it's not working. So like, I actually meant to do that. Like, everyone's booing me, but it's on purpose, guys, you know.
And I don't think it can be, because I think it's like everything he was doing was trying so hard to get the crowd back, but in the most inept, desperate ways. Like,
yeah,
thinking about it, it's like you ruined the entire like Lucha Brothers like title reign by taking over their shit. Like, there were so many things that he tried to do that like he tried to stop getting booed. I think he really genuinely hated getting booed. And
he just dug himself in a hole with his own character, because it's like, as Fuego Dose, he was getting cheered and stuff, you know, so it's not like he's incapable of it, but he just like got in a hole, and every way he tried to like pull himself out of it was just making it worse. I felt like
he did get into that zone though, like when he had the match with in November PPV, where like he was doing the heel stuff on the apron, where he like wasn't paying attention to Pat. Like, he did some matches where I was like, there's no way to interpret this other than you leaning into it, but I don't know, I don't really know what to do about it. And I guess it's like, he could, I want to be clear, I never called Cody a genius, and I don't think he is. I guess he could have had a plan that now will not come to fruition. I do think that the larger point is kind of like, if he wanted more creative control and wasn't getting it, I'm glad he didn't get it. Yeah. And I'm good for Tony for not giving it to him.
Yeah. Right. Well, and I feel like too, like just the fact that all his storylines were so sequestered off from the rest of AEW made them feel really weird. And like, I don't know whose fault that was, but it feels like more Cody's fault than Tony Khan's, because like all the other storylines are much more, or people are more integrated.
Well, it felt like it had, like now it's like it had to be tied to whatever behind the scenes stuff was going on with the other EVPs. And that's the thing that I like feel really fixated on, is that at least one of the reports at some point was like, some of the differences with the other EVPs are these creative differences, and they're like disagreements about wrestling, and presumably about like how to like book wrestling and how to like be a wrestling character and stuff. And that's completely unsurprising to me, because of how different, like how differently Cody clearly thinks about it than like the Young Bucks. And I went insane on Reddit and was reading every stupid thought in the universe. And it's actually quite amazing how many idiots are hanging out on Reddit, and they say some of the stupidest things you've ever seen in your life. But this I did find interesting, where someone who had been like watching, you know, since like Ring of Honor, like New Japan, like that kind of stuff, was saying, they were like, yeah, I've always thought that it's like Kenny and the Young Bucks have like, it's kind of like a serial comic book style, where it's like, that's how they think about wrestling storylines, where they're like, you have these characters and you kind of move them around in these little arcs. But like, like in a comic book, like there doesn't have to be like, you're spending a lot of time, and like some character traits are going to stay pretty much the same even while you give the impression of character growth and change, which I found really interesting. I was like, yeah, they're really good at that. Like, they don't have to change that much about their characters to make you be like, oh, but I love this like version of mm-hmm. what you're doing with them. Mm-hmm. And they were like, and Cody has, they said something that I was like, I have to Google this because I know that it's a reference and I don't get it. They were like, Cody has an old fashioned junkyard dog style of like, I was something like that. But basically where they were like, he doesn't think about it in those arcs. He thinks about like a much like smaller scale, like I'm gonna come out and do this series of matches and that's the arc, like the series mm-hmm. of matches is the arc. And it's a fundamental difference in terms of like how they think about booking themselves. And I'm like, yeah, and Cody's is bad. That's bad. I don't like that.
That's right.
I
mean, and that's why Kenny and the Young Bucks do interesting things and Cody does not do interesting
yeah.
things.
And I guess I totally get that there are people who can do that and it works for them. But like it comes back to that thing we're talking about in wrestling all the time with like, it, like what TV show you think you're in, kind of. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like how you perceive the world that you're creating for your character. And Cody's character takes himself really seriously in a way that I think like often implies to you, the viewer, that you should be paying attention to things he does and like looking for that longer character arc. But if you look, that's what this person was saying too. They were like, you'll see things as being Easter eggs because you've been trained by the other elite basically to right. do that. You're just like, if Matt and Nick Jackson were doing this, that would be an Easter egg. But with Cody, it's not. Like, it just right. won't be, and that's just not how he thinks about what he does, but he gives the impression that he does think about it that way, and that's a problem.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. I am curious if Cody's, like, way of thinking and so on is, like, a better fit for WWE. Like, I know he was already yeah. there, and it, like, didn't go well, but, like, I, you know, it's kind of, like, with this, like, whole Homelander, like, match to match style like work better there with like an yeah. older audience, and I don't know, like would, an audience that is also brain damaged by
what he's doing. Maybe so. You could
I don't know. Or, you know, an audience that's also brain damaged by Cody's dad, just like he is. Like,
yeah, no. It was so dark in that one report that was like, he wants to be a great booker like his dad. And we were oh all collectively God. Like, oh, my God, it's daddy issue. We should have known it's daddy issue.
Like, of course, like.
The Scooby-Doo kids pulling the mask off and being like, oh, it's daddy issues again.
I know. I have also wondered if like he sees the WWE as more of a stepping stone to like different kinds of media, because he's like clearly interested in being like a reality show guy. Like, I feel like he wants to be like on a John Cena kind of path, you know? So and so like,
well, and honestly, I mean, I think he doesn't have the carny gene, right? So it's like, I don't know that long-term wrestling is good for him, because he can't like,
yeah,
he can't do it the way that like all of our favorites do it. So either he's going to succeed in WWE that doesn't do that kind of storytelling, or he's going to use it as a launch pad to become the kind of crazy media mogul that he apparently wants to
yeah.
be.
I mean, I don't get the sense that he loves like wrestling exactly for its own sake. No. Like the way that like Moxley clearly like just wants to wrestle, doesn't want to be a business yeah. guy, doesn't want to be in the back, like just wants to, you know, do his violence in front of everybody.
Yeah, no, that's definitely true. It's just, I know I've said it before and my opinion hasn't changed. The idea of Cody becoming a celebrity in his own right is unthinkable to me. I don't think he's charismatic. I don't think he's interesting. I think he seems like a perfectly nice person in many clips that I've seen of him, but I'm just like, why do people think they are just like that they should just get to be celebrities? I like hate the world we live in, kind of, where I'm just like, what did you ever do that means you should get to be a celebrity? You're not interesting.
Right. Well, and if he does want to be in movies and stuff, like his neck tattoo is an insane choice, which also yeah. I saw someone on Reddit saying like, oh, Cody won't go to the WWE. He's probably like running for Senate or something. They seemed perfectly serious. And like with that neck tattoo, if Cody is running for the United States Senate.
People seem to have suggested that he has expressed interest in entering politics, which again is insane. And I'm like,
well, he has, but I don't. But this is the thing about Cody, is that you can't tell how much of it was a work, because there was a whole BTE
yeah.
like run where he was like pretending to run for, I think it was actually state Senate. I don't think it was like a Senate, but like he was like genuinely like looking in the camera and being like, yeah, this is like that. I would love to do something like that. And you're like, And at that time, I was like, okay, but you're a heel, and also nothing on BTE is necessarily real at any time.
Yeah.
So
he does kind of have the like completely vacant patriotic feel of like a politician. You know, absolutely. He could be John Ossoff in many ways. You know, like go for it.
And if, have we considered that maybe he could heal race relations in America? Just a few more of those speeches, he could get us like all the way there.
I would love if we did a little check-in in a year and we're like, wow, we made fun of this, but actually, Cody has saved America.
If someone did, I would celebrate him, sure. Oh my God. Well, let's just quickly touch on, it's like, what is Cody and Brandy both going? So what does that mean, materially mean for our AEW viewing experience at this point?
I would give so much money to find out exactly what Brandy was doing every day as the brand officer.
I know.
Because, like, she, I mean, this is from Sarah, but, like, Brandy has, like, a journalism degree, and she's never worked in marketing. So, like, I'm sure that there are ways that she could contribute, but the chief brand officer should probably have experience, maintaining a brand.
And again, so you think someone should have had experience with that before doing the job?
I know it's controversial. I know I'm going to get pushback, but
not from me, baby. I don't know. I really don't know. And I don't I know so little that I'm like at the point where I'm like, well, you know what? I have to assume like she did whatever she was supposed to do and that it was at least fine. I really don't know. In terms of her wrestling, that's one of the things that's gotten brought up a lot, too, is that, like, when AEW started, Brandy was, like, kind of, like, supposed to be a pretty big part of the women's division. She got pregnant. She has been out for quite a while. It's a much bigger division. And, like, they have been, you know what? Like, it feels good to say this. They've really been putting in some work, I think, trying to make the women's division function more like the men's division and have like the same level of competitiveness. Right. And obviously they still have lots of stuff to work on. But when you look at where we are now compared to where we were when we started watching, it is night and day. Actually.
For sure. They've brought in some good people too. Like for all I complain about Tony buying new men, he's bought some new women,
brought a lot to the division. And
like Mercedes,
like Brass City Bitch. And anyway, it's just a much more competitive division than it was. And Brandy doesn't have the same place in it based only on what other people have said about her, like, in-ring skills that maybe she did then. And I think the same is kind of true of Cody. Cody's vibe is like, I'm a top guy. I mean, I saw a comment that was like, that said, like, Cody is, like, in the top 10 guys at AEW. And I was like, that's insane. Ooh. That's crazy. He's not. I honestly don't think he is.
Like, I think you put in the notes here, like, do we think of Cody as a top guy? And I was like, very often I forget that he exists at all. Like, if you ask me, like, who are the top guys at AEW? I'd be like, Kenny, Mox, the Young Buck. You know, like, I'd go down the list and I would get to Cody probably. I'd be like, oh, my God, right, like him.
Well, but this is what's so interesting to me is that, like, so many of these reports have been, like, Cody wants to be booked better. He wants to be more of a top guy. He wants to be paid more, blah, blah. Part of the thing that I did respect him for was that he seemed fine hanging out at the mid-card. Yeah. That he from all reports, I mean, we started watching it right when Brody got the belt from him, or maybe gave it back. We hadn't seen, we hadn't seen his first reign, but like from all reports, he legitimized the TNT title, right? He made a real mid card. And like, I do want to give him credit for, I do love this. You're absolutely right. I love this tweet where it's like, someone links to an article that's like, Cody Rhodes doesn't believe in mid-card titles. And someone's like, spoken on like someone who's mid-card for life, because that's what he is. And Cody's like, you follow me. And he's like, because you're my favorite mid-carder. Like, that is me, where I'm like, yeah, he is. Like, he was a really good mid-carder. And I do think he should get credit for making, because like Punk is now doing that, right? Like Punk is like, seems to be cool, hanging out on the mid card. Punk's not going for the world title. He's not fucking with Hangman or like I think that's really valuable to have in a person. So that's why it's like disappointing to me that like he's like, there's nothing left in AEW for me because like I can't win the TNT title
yeah.
up for a fourth time. Yeah. I'm not going to be, they're not going to let me be a top guy. I don't know.
Yeah. And I guess that maybe I actually don't, I mean, it's like he had that stipulation against going for the AEW belt. If he had done the full heel turn, the stipulation's out the window basically, because heel right. does what he wants. So right. he could have gone for it. Like, I think there was a clear path. It seems like something with the heel stuff, I don't know what, and the creative control thing maybe were the ultimate factors, and some of the Brandy stuff, it seems like maybe I don't know exactly, but like yeah. she did not yeah. that last promo with Lambert, like I don't understand how they were trying to bring her back from maternity leave, but it was not the right way to do it at all.
No. I know. I'm yeah. I don't understand that, because like, okay, if you assume that she wanted, like, making a really big assumption that they brought out Dan Lambert to say horrible things because they wanted Brandy to get cheered against him, why would you start that promo with Brandy saying, like, insane shit, insane yeah. heel shit about whatever town that was? Was that yeah. Chicago? I don't
yeah,
remember.
It was Chicago. Yeah.
It's just a thing where I'm like, to me, you can, it's bad writing. I mean, I know it's what she said, but it's what she like wrote for herself in her head right. to say. You can say heel stuff that actually makes people sympathize with you because it makes them like understand your character better. Like, they listen to you say it and they're like, that's not a good person thing to say, but I am gaining an understanding of you that then when someone else comes in and is mean to you, my sympathy for you grows because right. they are like putting a thumb on your sore spot and I understand that now. Like, obviously it's not as easy as saying it that way to do, but it's you do it, you see it in all TV shows, because we've never watched a TV show where someone doesn't go from being a bad guy that you don't like to a good guy that you do. Right. And the way that she was approaching both of the promos that she did with Dan Lambert was not like that, which is why they were so uncomfortable to watch, because it felt like she came out and said, I don't want you to like me, so remember that, you're not supposed to like me, in like a really over the top way. And then he's saying stuff that is absolutely worse, and mm-hmm. but nobody looks good because you kind of don't know what to do with yourself. You're like, okay, right. well, I'm not supposed to sympathize with anybody. And I think even in a heel versus heel like match, you have to have someone where you're like, I understand the angle and you deserve the win more because of it.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know. It was really rough. Yeah. So I think that we'll never see it again. So yeah, that's kind of goodbye to all
I
that.
I mean, it will be kind of a relief. Like, and honestly, if Cody wasn't happy at AEW, like, it's better that he moves on. Like, yeah. it's insane to me to go to WWE, you know, but
yeah. I hope, like, he's happy.
Yeah. You know,
all the best to him and his family.
And probably he's getting paid a lot of money. And, you know, like, if I was not happy at my job and my sure. rival company offered me millions of dollars, like, I'd probably take it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You know, Tony, give me millions of dollars or something yeah. if you want to. Well, the final thing that I will say is that we do have a theory that Cody was actually making the vibes at AEW significantly less horny, because last night's episode, the first without him, was out of fucking control. So we're going to get into that. We're going to start out by talking about the Hangman versus Adam Cole promo. So Hangman came out to do a little interview with Tony Schiavone about his Texas Death Match. He immediately got interrupted by Adam Cole, who wanted to have a talk about some of their shared relationships, some of their shared friendships, who wanted to put his thumb on some of Hangman's sore spots. In a kind of a great little backhanded compliment snake way, where he was being like, oh, of course I respect you as an opponent, and he extended the hand of friendship, and Hangman shook his hand, Adam Cole left, immediately Red Dragon, who I have missed, came out, started beating him up, Adam Cole came back, did some beating him up, a bunch of security guards, like unbranded security guards, not refs, I love like the distinction between sometimes unbranded. The refs will do this work, sometimes the security guards will, came out to try and save Hangman, and then eventually the Dark Order, and this had been part of Adam Cole's thing, he had mentioned the Young Bucks, and he'd been like, and you're not even friends with Dark Order anymore. The Dark Order did come out, interceded, and then Preston Vance just started like throwing security guards out of the ring. I guess like we think maybe
so weird.
to show like that he's strong, and it was supposed to freak Red Dragon and Adam Cole out, which it did, but it actually made him seem kind of like he was maybe having a heel turn or something.
On BTE, he's always like doing a lot of drugs. Like, has it gotten on top of him?
I loved the look on Red Dragon's face because they were like, listen, I know that we're like morally bankrupt, but we would never do this.
And it is
hitting
true.
A security guard.
It is true that mostly the heels won't even do that. Like, that,
they're like, yeah. Those guys are there. They're getting a living wage. Like,
you're like, we support
on.
A union, of course. We are heels, but we're union guys. Yeah. So now Adam Cole is going to fight 10 on Rampage tomorrow, which I was a little like, oh, okay. What'd you guys think about this whole thing? What do you think?
I loved it. I was medium unsure about this entire thing. Like, I want to see them fight, but I was like, are they going to retread stuff? Like,
yeah.
I don't really know if they're going to pull it off. I love the vibe of Adam Cole committing psychological warfare on Hangman. And the fact that Hangman's... He's very good at it, good. But also Hangman is such an easy mark. Yeah. Yeah. Hangman rises to every single bait and like everything
it was,
hits.
Yeah, it felt very much like, oh, Hangman's a little soft boy. Like, you can hurt his feelings so easily.
So
like,
easy.
Just tell him his friends don't like him and he believes you in his heart and he feels bad, you know?
And that's
not only my...
No, go ahead.
Sorry. Not only that, this is very quick. Not only that your friends don't like you, but you have made your friends not like you. Like, that's the part that cracked him open. And he was like, oh.
Yeah. And that's interesting, too, because it's a good little character note for Hangman where it's like, you haven't solved all your problems. Like, winning doesn't solve all your emotional problems. You know, you get married and you find out, like, and there's still some stuff you got to overcome. So, yeah, I agree. I thought that was really good. And I think it, like, it just felt very in line with the stuff that Adam Cole has been doing with the Bucks. Like, this was, like, a ramped up antagonistic version of it. But, of course, it made you be like, Adam Cole is a full-time gaslighter. Like,
actually,
And, mwah, mama love it.
It was so good. And, like, then when, I know we're going to get into it, but then when, like, Adam Cole also goes back and is, like, yelling at the Young Bucks for not like helping beat up Hangman. Mm-hmm. It's just like there's a lot of very rich dynamics here that they're getting into, which is very good for a Hangman arc.
Yeah. Well, we can get into, let's go into that and then we can come back to any Adam Cole stuff we want to clean up. So what's going on with the Bucks this week? They fought Roppongi Vice on Rampage last week. It was a fucking banger. I mean, it was really good.
Fun.
They all seemed to be having a lot of fun. OC was ringside. At one point, he like screedled under the ring and came out with Danhausen. Danhausen put a little curse on the Young Bucks. Everybody's having a laugh. So fun. So then this week on Dynamite, as Anne was saying, the Bucks, Adam Cole, and Red Dragon cut a promo where Red Dragon, I think, were saying, why didn't you come out and help beat up Hangman? And the Bucks were like, well, we've kind of done that. We've kind of been there, done that. Like, it was a really funny little evasive. They're like, because it's boring and we don't want to. It's like, that's exactly what you say, like, about someone you actually do want to kiss.
Once you beat up a guy once, like, you're kind of done with that forever,
totally
actually.
Totally over it. Yeah. And then they got into a little fight about which of them is the better dad, which I loved. And the promo ended with the Bucks went off in one direction, Red Dragon went off in another. Adam Cole was looking back and forth. Brandon finally got a little of his own back and said, which way are you going to go? And got told to shut up,
Brandon.
I know. Which I love. So now we're in like the overall Elite arcs that really do seem to be aligning. Like the Hangman stuff with Adam Cole seems to be aligning. And that is so sexy to me. I'm like, yes, I love to see that like we're still in the same network of issues. Like, and it is.
It was so good to have Adam Cole out there like taunting Hangman about like his ended friendship with the Young Bucks and then go backstage and be like, actually, Young Bucks are being a little bit weird about Hangman. Like maybe things aren't as ended as it seemed like they were. Like I'm electrified. Yeah. I'm into it.
And it is like, it's like Adam Cole knows that that Matt and Nick were out there when Hangman won against Kenny. Mm-hmm. Like he mm-hmm. knows that they yeah. that they gave Hangman the nod and were like, okay, go ahead and do it. That means like, and you know, they all have a lot of history. They know lots of stuff about each other, but like they know that. Kenny doesn't know that. And the other thing that's going on right now is that Jay White is fighting Greg, Trent Beretta, on tomorrow night's Rampage. So Jay White is in the mix. And I actually do think I at least am going to have to watch some old NJPW stuff with Jay White, because I'm so interested in what people have been saying about him, which is basically that Jay White is kind of like Kenny's like most feared opponent. Like that's kind of Kenny's white whale, where it's like he's never won against Jay White and he's pretty scared of him. And it's like when I think
I do feel like Kenny's gonna come back to these dynamics, yes, like the gif of Troy from Community walking in with yes. the pizza into a room that's on fire,
right?
Like, what's like, been happening?
The room's on fire and it's full of like all your mortal enemies.
Yeah, it's that troll in the middle staring at him like Jay yeah. White.
Just yeah, Adam Cole standing there with a gas can being like, oh hey Kenny.
I'll take care of things cleaner.
Well, if any of our listeners have recommendations for what we should be watching, please give them to us, because the Bucks do continually suck me in. Like, there's nobody else in that I would ever look up New Japan matches for, except this, the Elite. I'm like, well, maybe I should do my research.
It's that continuing comic book, like, you know, you want to get back to the back issues.
I know. They actually, the Bucks do, the comic book thing to me was like really like, oh, that's exactly what it is, because it reminded me of an experience that I used to have of like going to Barnes and Noble, because I was like not a cool enough nerd to go to a comic book store. So I'm just like looking at like manga at Barnes and Noble, but where you'd like pick up the most recent version of something and then accidentally end up reading the series backwards, because like you keep being like, well, I'm not going to look at that much more of it, but I do seem to have looked at this whole one, so I'll just look at the one before. And then you just keep going back because you're like, it kind of makes sense. Like you can put it together backwards too. And it's just, it just sucks you in.
It's each thing is a little bit of a standalone, but it's enriched by the past experiences. So,
I do think the Young Bucks are manga you find at Barnes & Noble is so correct on like so many levels.
And also like a little bit insulting. Like, I don't know if they'd love it, but.
Well, that's right. They were some really good mangas, actually.
Kenny would love it if you told Kenny that.
Maybe it's like the Young Bucks wouldn't have any feelings about it. They'd kind of be like, I guess direct that to Kenny. That's really not our area of expertise. So that does seem like Kenny's gonna come back to a big mess on his hands.
Do you want Kenny back at Revolution though? I kind of want the Adam Cole longer. And it's not so much that as I want the Adam Cole and Hangman stuff to stand on its own without Kenny, and then have Kenny come back after.
It doesn't feel like there's quite enough time, unless like Kenny comes back like kind of like at the end of Revolution. When is Revolution? It's in March, right?
It's in March
6th, I think.
Yeah, that's 2 weeks away.
I was vaguely thinking, but it's not a thing where I'm like, it'll happen or I'm married to it. I was vaguely like, if Kenny came back at the end of Revolution, that would be pretty sexy for me. I would like that. I think I don't feel... Well, I don't know. Maybe I do. I don't feel like I feel as strongly as you do, Leah, about Kenny not getting involved, except that it's true that, like, if Kenny was involved peripherally, if they're, like, talking about Kenny, that's kind of fine to me.
Yeah.
I agree that I don't want it to be a thing where Adam Cole's, like, eyes get taken off Hangman because he sees Kenny as a bigger threat.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
For sure.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fair. I also am just generally kind of interested. I feel like they've done a pretty good job of drawing the whole Super Click. Like, we're still in the best friends universe with like Greg. They've done a pretty good job of like drawing it out for a long time. They're giving Greg kind of like a New Japan like special segment of the feud right now, which I'm interested in. But it's been going on for longer than I thought it would. So,
yeah, it's been nice too. I mean, and they found like a lot of different, like, they've kept me interested. They haven't been just retreading stuff, so it's been good.
It is the Million Man feud. I mean, we
it's true, there's a lot of different,
we're holding a lot of them in our heads right now.
I was thinking Adam Cole's really building himself a little clown car of people that the Bucks don't like pretty much there just won't be room for them in the car.
I think I said when we were watching that Adam Cole beatdown, I was, and the Bucks weren't coming out to do the beatdown too, I was like, God, I hope that at some point I get to see like the Bucks come out and save Hangman, which I think I will. But just now I was like, if I get to see Hangman save the Bucks, I'm going to fucking lose it. Like, my brain is going to blow out of my brain with excitement. That handsome prince saving those little boys.
Hangman saving anybody, but with that.
Listen. The pod that follows that happening will be 2 hours long and we'll only have one topic.
Yeah.
It'll just be high-pitched shrieking noises.
And you know what? It's like, we just put a disclaimer. It's like, you don't have to listen. We won't make you. You listen if you want to listen and you know what you're going to hear.
So many people in this world choose not to listen.
Almost everybody, really. Oh, man. Well, let's get into what some of the other horny men on AEW Dynamite were up to this week. So CM Punk opened the show with, it was a really funny little promo. Like, I really liked it. We open up, he's already sitting in the ring. So we fished our wish. We didn't have to watch him come out to call the personality.
True. That was nice.
He's sitting cross-legged in the ring and he just delivers kind of a long little monologue about like how he thinks about like being a wrestler and where he is in his wrestling career and like what he thinks about like losing and winning and pride, et cetera, et cetera. And then he gets to the point where he's like, I'm thinking about when I'm going to challenge MJF. Like, I get to challenge him to any type of match, any time that I want. And so he decides it's going to be a BDSM match, a classic BDSM dog collar match. And he says, MJF, I hope that you'll be my Valentine, which is a reference that was quite clear to someone named Valentine. And I didn't care. It was horny. And then he said MJF had to respond in person. So MJF came out, did some of the most exquisite face acting I've ever seen out of him, and left without saying anything. And Tony booked the match for Revolution. What do you guys think?
I loved it. I thought that Punk's the whole. This is gonna sound so marky, and I'm so sorry.
Hell yeah, baby!
But like the way that he started it, like going through like his own feelings, it was kind of like a Mark Antony speech about Brutus killing Caesar, where
that's
like
he exactly
like,
what I thought
he was. Yeah, it was like
I said Hamlet upstage,
speech.
I think. Like, same
thing. Oh God. It was like I could be in that crowd being like, yeah, we should just kill MJF. Like
absolutely just kill MJF.
And then MJF's little face, like looking so hurt that like Punk would be making fun of that picture so much. He was like, he had his little hurt face. And I'm like, oh gosh.
I know. I thought it was so interesting too that it was after like MJF just beat him, you know, and like whispered in his ear that he sucked afterwards and whatever. Like, it's real interesting for Punk to come out like so confident and aggressive and MJF so on his back foot. Like, it's an, I don't know, it was just like an interesting contrast and I liked it.
Yeah. And yeah, and that just that like Punk seemed like really self-assured. Like, it was a real vibe of it's like, I'm an older guy. I took the time. I worked through my feelings. And now you're going to work through them with me when I put a collar on you. MJF, I was like, no one has ever talked to me like that before. I gotta go backstage and deal with it on my own. You're right.
I think that's right too, because like Jericho is his other big main feud, and Jericho has never talked to me like that.
And he never could.
And he never could.
If Jericho sees that this is getting over and tries to get out a dog collar, he's gonna get booed off of my screen so fast by me alone. Say, not in my house.
I'm like losing my mind trying to picture Chris Jericho going to Sammy and being like, Sammy, Sammy, it's time. I'm going to teach you about pride, Sammy.
Teach you about pride.
He like last thing Sammy needs to learn.
Yeah, right. Teach Sammy about humility. Man. Oh yeah, when you said that Hamlet thing in the group chat too, like just thinking about the monologues, I felt like, man, I could see like CM Punk or one of these guys just putting on a little play about MJF killing their dad, you know?
Like, it's really interesting. This is not really related to wrestling, but like I would love to, there must be somewhere I can read about it or learn about it, what it is that makes people when they see something be like, that's Shakespearean to me, because it's not, I felt weird like saying it actually, because I was like, it's, I'm not saying the lines are Shakespearean, but you know it when you see it. It's like Leah saying the same thing is it, like, you know it when you see it, that you're just like, oh, you're so perfectly in a play right now and processing things the way that a character does in a play so that we can see it happening. It's really delightful to me. I just love it.
it's something about crowd control.
Yeah,
like,
that's
it's
true.
Something about, like, I mean, did you know that Shakespeare was pretty good at talking to crowds? I don't know if you knew about this, but he was actually like the king promo.
Well, and in like a modern movie or whatever, you don't get a lot of like the character expressing their thoughts to the audience. But so like wrestling is one of those few mediums where you do have that like direct, like, here's what I think and feel. And you're like the other, you're the person I'm talking to.
Yeah. And when someone does it well, it's like, it really does. It does just take you away. Like it feels so exciting.
Well, you know, like Shakespeare theater was much more like audience involved, right? Like they're yelling stuff. Like I was thinking, like just the one time I went to that indie show, like felt so much like a interactive experience where you were like really a part of it. And
I was reading something about the GCW crowd after they were throwing the bottles at Matt Cardona, and like people were going back and forth about whether that was okay or whether it was not. And like I was like reading something where somebody was like, no, Matt Cardona wanted them to do that, and they knew that they were supposed to. Like there was like a whole conversation between them and the crowd, and they were playing a certain role. He was playing a heel, and they were playing the crowd reacting to a heel, and everybody in that room was having the world's best time playing the role that they were meant to.
Yeah.
And that was very fun.
It's really interesting too that it's like, I think that is like some of the most peaceful moments of watching wrestling, where it's like, because I have a lot of crowd anxiety where I'm like really worried about how the crowd is reacting to things. So in some promos where like the crowd is not worried and you're not worried and you're just like, this person knows exactly what they're doing and the crowd understands that and is like reacting in the exact right way, it's honestly like a little bit of a high. Like it just feels so
totally
good. And some other like good promos don't even have that, because I was thinking about it with the Hangman Adam Cole, where I think someone in our group chat and like some people on Twitter were all like, this audience doesn't know how to react to these two men who are maybe gonna kiss. And it's like, that's totally true. The audience was like pretty, like you could tell they were like, I want to chant the right thing that like explains exactly what I feel, but I don't have access to that thing, so it's gonna feel a little weird in here.
It's true. Well, and I think too, like there's just like a real intense emotional experience to be like in a group that's all experiencing the same thing at the same time and in a very like interacting way. And I feel like you can get it sometimes like in a religious experience. Like wrestling really does it when it's really, because like when you're in the crowd and giving the reaction that you know they want from you, it is like, it's not telepathic because like they're obviously like telegraphing to you what it is, but you do feel very,
but when
like,
it's when it feels connected. Natural and you're doing it, it is just like, oh,
it's just, I think, I'm part of something bigger than me, kind of.
Weirdly, I think the number one crowd experience I've had that was the dark match between the Dark Order members.
Yes.
Do you guys remember that? When like when all of us were like losing our mind and chanting like, I'm conflicted, and you could tell that the Dark Order was like thrilled with the reaction they were getting, but it was still going, and we were all one.
That
was perfect. Yeah.
That's so true. That especially because it's like, it wasn't a normal reaction to a match. Like it was a really abnormal reaction to a match for everyone to be like, I don't want this match to be happening, but at the same time, it is like, I am thrilled to be here and so excited to see it. Like it was you're right, that's a really really good example. Well you know what, Punk gets those Punk Bucks for a reason. Punk Bucks. And MJF should get those Punk Bucks eventually too, because he is
he knows how to work a crowd.
He knows how to work a crowd. Okay, and then Bryan Danielson this week. So first he cut a promo on Rampage in which he explained that he's not worried about Mox's one night stand with CM Punk because he wants
his words.
His words.
That's not our paraphrase. That's his words.
This is, it was all on the surface where you were like, wow, it's kind of texting the subtext there. But he wants to build something long term with Mox. And then he also had like a little exchange with Lee Moriarty where like they were arguing about whether Lee Moriarty could be good and violent. So they had a match this week that was the most X-rated match I feel like I've ever seen since we started watching wrestling. Like I was just, it was really good. They both like seemed very strong and good and violent, and also I don't really know what to say, honestly.
I know, it was one of those moments where I was like genuinely like, straight men like this? This is a straight men sport?
It was kind of like, this is dominated? Explain it to me. What do you see? Explain it to me.
Do you remember the one? I don't remember what match we were watching, but we asked our friend Caroline's roommate's boyfriend to be like, what do you yeah. see? And the instant response was, not what you see.
I mean, what can you say? What they did some very cool moves, like that I've never seen before. Like, and it was a really interesting. I thought that Lee Moriarty was a really good fit for the Danielson's grappling style in a way where it's like it wasn't slow. Like he wasn't going to let Danielson go slow, but it still had a lot of that like intimate body working.
They really did a great job of adapting the Kama Sutra for a wrestler.
Yeah.
that moment when Liam Moriarty was pinned down and lifted his shoulders off the mat by getting his hips in the air.
Yeah.
And then Bryan Danielson punched him in the hips with his own hips.
Yeah.
When I saw that.
Yeah.
I was shocked. Shocked.
Really makes you think. Wow. Loved it. And then afterwards, that was just foreplay, really. Afterwards, Danielson was like, I am going to need a little response from Mox about my proposal. So Mox came out looking very slinky and happy. He's just looking so healthy and good. And
speaking of people who know how to work a crowd.
He does. And he gave a kind of a long little promo where he talked about like the first time they wrestled, like getting into it, basically was like, I've never beaten you, and like kind of set up the importance of the relationship in a really good way where you're just like, you like to see it, you're helping me to understand the history. And then he said he was like, at first had been like, maybe I should say yes, and then was like, I don't know, I don't fight with people I don't bleed with, which was really just pretty sexy stuff.
John Moxley's use of blood in his promos lately, it's been,
you know, he should wonderful. Get an award for that. I don't know if we're giving out like the Wetworks award, but
the thematic
motif little
right.
And so he basically was like, it's not a yes, it's not a no yet, which made me think like potentially we are going to get a fight between them that maybe is like a little different than some of the other fights that we've seen. I don't know.
Fights are the way that Jon Moxley, you know, gets to know someone, becomes intimate with them.
That is how he got to, like, now he's friends with Darby because he beat up Darby pretty good. And Eddie. Now he's Eddie. That's which, by the way, the entire time when he kept being like, I mean, I just don't know, like, who, like, people that I stand with. I kept being like, bring Eddie out.
And it's as we're going to talk about soon, it's like Eddie did come back this episode, and I am like, I have to see Eddie and Mox together. I need them to maintain the friendship, even if like Mox does start Bryan Danielson's Cobra Kai school of violent wrestler boys. I need to see Eddie sometimes being like, that's fun for you, babe. I love that you're having fun with that.
I know. Seriously. I am really like surprised and impressed that they're dragging this out a little bit longer, because I really thought Mox was going to say no in this promo, because when he was like, I thought I should say yes, and then kept talking about that. And I was like, oh, like this is leading up to a big like, but absolutely not kind of thing. But it's just like, oh, no, we're going to like string this along. I'm intrigued. I like it.
I think the longer they work it and the deeper it gets, like when they were getting into the history and like Mox seemed to be doing some like real like self-examination in a way that he doesn't usually do, but like in a way that felt really in character, I like it more and more. And I felt kind of resistant to it because I was in such a bad place with Bryan Danielson, whom I love but was so mad at because I disliked the Hangman feud. But this one, I feel like it's really good that they're taking a little time with it, and like I'm warming up. It's not an Omicron surge, but it's like a nice normal graph, you know?
Yeah. One thing I want to say about this match was just that, like, or this promo was just like, I was really noticing, it's not the first time he does this, but like it was, I just noticed, because I haven't seen him in a while, Mox never stops moving in that ring when he's talking, and he's like, he's constantly like, his shoulders are going and he's pacing like a little like seething, like
pent up tiger in a cage.
It adds so much that like he's restless. It's perfect.
Yeah. He's so physical. It's just like, yeah.
It was a good, I mean, like, because it was a great episode of Dynamite, I thought. And there's some stuff where it's like, if you were getting into it in your like English class or whatever, it's like you start the show with that really still promo from CM Punk, where he is holding your attention in a kind of a shocking way, not moving at all, really. And then you get to this and it has that like restless energy, and Mox's vibe is always like, at any second, I could get tired of talking and do something else instead.
Yeah, right.
For sure.
Right, right.
So pretty good stuff. Let's talk about our ladies. So
Leah's ladies.
As you know, I'm an auxiliary Brass City bitch. So
it's true.
Britt fought someone named Robin Renegade on Rampage last week. The main thing to know about this is that Robin's twin said that everyone should watch Robin lick ass on Rampage, which I think really has been intoxicating for many of us. I love to think about it.
I've spent like what, like a full week? Is it two weeks?
A week.
Just occasionally, like just thinking on it and being like, what if I just started like mixing that into my dialogue?
I don't like
just
the being like motion you made near your mouth while you were saying.
Leah's going to be like prepping for meetings like, all right, so watch me lick ass in that HR meeting later today.
Ladies, I'm going to lick ass in that Excel spreadsheet.
Well, yeah, we're all licking ass in our Excel spreadsheets, of course. You can't get away with not licking ass when you're using Excel. Leah, you said that you would explain some of what went on during and after this match.
Yeah, it's amazing. First of all, one of my friends watched this episode for the, it was her, his very, very first episode of wrestling he'd ever watched. And he was like, the women just kept coming out of the tunnels.
And that's so nice to hear, because it has not always been the case.
Yeah, I know.
They have
so
many women packed back there.
God.
Now.
Yeah. All right. So Britt came out with just Rebel, and she fought Robin Renegade. It was fine. It was like not quite a squash, but kind of like squashy. Like it was a short match. It was fine. So then Britt wins, and then immediately like Rebel grabs the glove. Britt's going to do the after match lockjaw, which is bad form. And then Thunder Rosa comes out and is like, don't you do that. Like, that's not what good girls do. Yeah. And so Thunder Rosa's getting beat up. And then, which, by the way, I will say that the All Elite Wrestling recaps, which ladies are unhinged.
I love says that.
Are they still full of exclamation points?
It's unbelievable. Because Tony writes them in his coke puke. We know that.
Yeah. And I will say that it says Thunder Rosa grounded and pounded Britt.
Oh my God.
Tony!
We're out here being perverts, but it's just like being spoon-fed to us.
I know. It's kind of like they're trying to put us out of a job. They're like, we don't need you to perv on our material. We can perv on our own material. Thank you.
So Thunder Rosa's beating up Britt. Then Jamie Hayter comes out and starts beating up Thunder Rosa.
She looked so good.
She looked
She always does, but...
Yeah. And then Mercedes comes out and pushes Jamie out of the way to start beating on Thunder Rosa herself. But that pissed Jamie off. So Jamie pushed Mercedes back. The two of them started fighting. So then Britt had to like get in between them. And then she like slung her arms around them. And I think she kissed their heads. Like,
she did. Sure. Yeah. Oh, yeah. She did. Yeah. I remember that.
So then... Do you want me to get into the Dynamite stuff, or do you
seem worked up, so keep going.
I'm always worked up about Mercedes.
Brass City.
So then they had their Thunder Rosa and Mercedes Martinez had their no DQ match, which it wasn't lights out because I really
thought it wasn't, but it worked with the little joke I was making. So
I know.
Said it anyway.
I know. I love it though. So then they did a promo before that, which the guy from Cobra Kai came out, which we all flipped
Very
out
excited.
And we're like, oh my God, it's John Kreese. And then the internet was like, oh, he's back again. And we were all like, yes, back again, which we had seen him the first time.
I think the first time was probably before we were watching
the
show.
I don't know.
It was not. I looked it up. It was July 2021.
Yeah, I saw it was, but when did we start watching Cobra Kai, though?
Oh, I thought you meant before we started watching AEW.
Oh, no. I know we were watching AEW, but I was thinking,
I hadn't even seen the Cobra Kai movie. You're right. I wouldn't have known.
Yeah.
Okay.
Karate Kid.
Okay, we're absolved. Yeah. We did like, nothing wrong.
I think I probably watched that promo and was just like, some wrestling man. I don't know who it is, you know, like, yeah.
That's a good point.
See,
thank you, Anna.
I didn't think about it that way. I looked up to see when it was, and I was like, well, I was certainly watching AEW in July 2021.
No, I definitely was, but I think we would have, if we had been watching Cobra Kai, I think we would have had the same pop that we did this time. But
I hope so.
Well, it big time popped us this time.
We're pretty stoked. It's crazy that he's just like in the AEW universe in character. Like, I love that.
Yeah. I think the implications for wrestling are really fun. And it makes me think, like, what other properties could we bring into the wrestling universe?
Fictional properties. I know. He works really well with Brit Sensi.
I know.
I don't know why my brain did this, but I was like, Succession takes over the
interesting.
Liz, like, we've got to open ourselves up to some new markets. Have I got a hot one?
Some prestige television. Well, yeah, like, instead of having Tony Khan as the owner, you're just like, yeah, it's Roman Roy or whatever.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, so Thunder Rosa ended up winning the fight with Mercedes Martinez. It was pretty good. There's a couple, like, weird moments where I was like, oh, I don't think you guys were on the same page on that. But I think it was pretty good.
Yeah, I agree.
And then, so Thunder Rosa does this extremely horny thing where she extends a hand to Mercedes Martinez and pulls her up and then bows to her as a mark of respect. Mercedes, who has never been shown kindness, stares at her, bewildered, and is like, what is this? Because she is a feral dog who is like...
from the streets of the Brass City, the tough, the mean streets.
Okay, well, it's a real Waterbury, city, and
where the dogs howl all night long in hunger, roaming packs of
it's Connecticut the fifth, wild dogs. Yeah.
It's the fifth biggest city in New England, and
New England, our toughest region.
God's toughest soldiers.
Well, I'm loving how close you've gotten to the character. You are it. You're really in her.
Yeah, you're really.
Oh my God.
It's beyond an Omicron surge for Leah. I love it.
I think that undermines my Omicron surge, please.
No, it doesn't undermine it. It just puts it in perspective.
No, I have Omicron as much as this for Kyle, my son.
When you start talking about how Kyle's never known a moment of kindness,
well, I can't say that because he has Bobby Fish. He's actually known so much kindness. He has a man who loves him so much. It's not my fault that he hasn't suffered like Mercedes.
Sure.
On the mean streets of the Brass City. I shouldn't be penalized for that.
You're right. You both had such an Omicron
surge. I like that you consider Anne calling us deranged being penalized. I know. You're like, admit it, I'm crazy too, Anne.
I don't like the implication that my love is less. That will make Kyle feel bad in a way that he hasn't until now, because he's been cosseted and loved by Bobby.
Once we get done with this, we just send the recording straight to Kyle's email.
Kyle is our first listener. Don't worry about that. Okay, we gotta get to the bottom of what happened here. So
we're never going to get through this podcast.
At the end. Yeah. Right. Oh, yeah. We got to cut off pretty much after this.
Yeah. So Mercedes, bewildered. Then Jamie Hayter starts attack. Jamie Hayter and Britt start attacking Thunder Rosa. Mercedes is slumped against the ropes watching with a conflicted look in her eyes.
She's never known love.
She's never known kindness. Her first kindness is now being attacked. And what does she do? And so Britt hands her the steel pipe and pushes her in the mode of John Kreese. It's like, you do the bad karate now. You do it. Yeah. And Mercedes stands over Thunder Rosa and looks down at her.
AEW really crafted quite a rich narrative here. I didn't quite realize as I was watching it.
The emotion was playing in her face. And then Jamie Hayter says, "I've waited enough." And
she, I don't know that she said it, but
she said it with her eyes straight to Leah.
What, Jamie Hayter? Say it to me next time, baby.
So Jamie Hayter starts beating up Mercedes Martinez. So now both women, both Mercedes and Thunder Rosa, are laying on the ring, decimated, and I will have someday a tag match, and we will have an hour-long pod just about that.
Well, let's not go crazy.
I'd love it if Leah started writing like novelizations of AEW Dynamite episodes. Because I really think you could find a niche there. Just get some purple prose going.
Yeah, like
it'll be like a Star Wars thing.
Yeah, yeah. I honestly think that there's something there. There's something there.
Little kids would love to buy little novelizations.
And if we wrote those little novelizations, we could fill in some of the promos that they don't do, but they should.
Yeah,
do.
We can add in a Dante promo or two with our little
three
hands.
Or four or five or six. Like
10,
he's gonna need that.
It makes sense.
Explain what's going on. Yeah, well, I think we kind of, the explanation kind of spoke for itself. This is the emotionally rich kind of narrative that we've been looking for in the women's division. I think everybody is bringing a lot of good, like, actor character work. I want to see basically every iteration of those fights. Mm-hmm. I think we're building to that Britt Thunder Rosa, where probably Thunder Rosa is going to get the title. That'll be really sexy, I'm guessing. I mean, prove me wrong. But, I just think it's great. I think it's so good.
It's great. It's so exciting to have women's matches that are bringing such like complicated emotional dynamics that are very like visceral and feel very integral to the character. You know, it's just like a very natural,
I know.
Good work.
And it's fun because it's like, it is like even just talking about this now, it's like looking back at the way we like have to talk about the women's matches sometimes where we're like, we don't know exactly what emotionally we were supposed to think was going on, so it's like you can't have those novelizations, that beautiful novelization that Leah is giving us, but here there is a narrative and we're fucking loving it.
Imagine Anna Jay conveying that she finally knows kindness.
I hope she gets there, because you know what, yet again this week Jungle Boy had been working on a little promo where with a cheekish little glint in his eye he told us how much he loves three ways.
And then Luchasaurus gave a little, like, son, like, little bark at him.
But then at the end, Luchasaurus also said, three ways. So what I was supposed to take away from that. We don't have the time to get into anything else. I will just say again, Eddie is back. Santana and Ortiz won their little custody battle match. I don't really know, like, what is going to happen now, but... No. And I hated watching Jake Hager. The end.
Sorry, Jake. It's pretty much the high points of Dynamite, I would say. Yep.
And that Darby Sammy match, emotionally uninteresting, but
the main event, whatever.
So good.
I love that we somehow talked about Cody for so long that we don't get to talk about Darby Allin.
You told me that we didn't have to. Before this, I was like, I'm worried we might talk about Cody for too long because I'm too interested in it, just like in the dynamics. And Leah looked at me like she's like, that's not a concern. Leah, do you see now why it was a concern?
I literally was like, we're going to do 5 minutes on it.
You are a fucking fool. You are a dumb bitch.
And I do feel like we could have gone probably the full hour on Cody. Like, I did feel like, oh, we scratched the surface on how much
it's really only, it's like not that it's about, I mean, it is. It's like Cody is such a, he just seems to mismanage himself so badly that like, you can't.
Well, it's the kind of thing where it's like a book that's just bad, you don't care about, but one that like could have been good if
they'd
done
some things
differently.
When we talk about The Magicians, and this is like when we talk about Lev Grossman's novels.
Lev Grossman, exactly.
My God, could be good, but it's in the hands of someone who would never make it good. So on that note, I've been Allie.
I've been Ann.
And I've been Leah.
This is Tunnel Talk, the Cody Show. Our show is produced by Mercury Fornovich. We'll be following Cody to WWE. And our theme is Cypher Skorkin. You can find us on Twitter at Tunnel Talk Pod, via email at tunneltalkpod@gmail.com. Please rate, review, subscribe. Send us your Cody thoughts. Send us your Jay White and JPW recommendations. And we really will. If you send us some, we'll watch them and talk about them. Subscribe to us and come back next week.
And thanks to Papa Vince.
Thanks.
Papa Vince.
Thanks, as always, to Papa Vince McMahon. Ooh, feels gross. That feels good.